If you want to open your Bibles to Mark chapter 2, the text that Mike just read is the Great Commission, and we're going to reference back to that, but we're actually going to be teaching from Mark chapter 2. I want to make a quick note about the harvest offering that Pastor Ken mentioned before. If you're new to Harvest, this will be brand new to you, but once a year, the Sunday before Thanksgiving, for a few years now, we have taken a special offering for missions. And not just a generic general offering, we have adopted a project, prayed, and asked God if we could be able to help one of our missionaries or somebody that we would know complete a project that would be really helpful in pushing their ministry forward. And then we'd be able to celebrate together the completion of that. And so on that Sunday morning, I'd like to ask you to think and pray about a special offering, different than your normal offering, tithes and offerings to your church, but a special offering for missions, and pray what God would have you to do, what kind of sacrifice you could make for that gift. We'll actually have that offering here. We'll come forward during that time. Families will come forward, it's just a beautiful, humble sense of offering before God, and you'll be blessed by it. It's one of my favorite services. And so let me ask you to think and pray about what you can do, what God would have you do as we prepare for that a couple months from now. If you notice a little extra glow in Miss Faith, it is because we have another of our children that's here on Guam. Our daughter Kara and her husband Nate are here, and they brought with them our newest grandbaby. Sophia Kay is with them as well. They just moved this week and here for the first Sunday. And Kara, of course, has been here before visiting and lived here for a little bit, but brought her husband and baby with her this time. So it's amazing, and we're so glad that they're here. Make sure you get a chance to introduce yourself to them and welcome them here. Well, Mark chapter 2 is one of my favorite stories in the New Testament. I love every part of it. I shared it with you in one of the first messages I preached here on Guam back 7 years ago, and I purposefully shared it then because it's one of my favorite Bible stories, and actually it's so formative to me. It has been so formative in how I live and really my personal philosophy of ministry and how I want to live my life. A whole bunch of you weren't here at that time that we talked about it the first time, and the rest of you are very unlikely that you'll remember much anyway, but I knew then that we're going to come back to this. In fact, we'll come back to it again because I think it is important, significant. I'm not sure if what we're going to talk about this morning, whether it describes my life, but I desperately want it to. And I'm praying that even in talking about it together with you, that my heart would be reignited and rechallenged for these kinds of things. So if you'd read with me Mark chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. And again, he entered into Capernaum after some days, and it was noticed that he was in the house. I think that's how that reads. And straightway many were gathered together, insomuch that there was no room to receive them. No, not so much as about the door. And he preached the word unto them. And they come unto him, bringing one sick of the palsy, which was born of four. And when they could not come nigh unto him for the press, right, there's so many people crowded around, they couldn't even get close to Jesus. They uncovered the roof where he was, and when they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. When Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, "Son, thy sins be forgiven thee." But there were certain of the scribes sitting there and reasoning in their hearts, "Why doth this man thus speak blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God only?" And immediately, when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, "Why reason ye these things in your hearts? Whether is it easier to say to the sick of the palsy, 'Thy sins be forgiven thee,' or to say, arise and take up your bed and walk. But that you may know that the Son of Man has power on earth to forgive sins, he saith to the sick of the palsy, I say unto you, arise and take up your bed and go your way into thine house. Man, I love this story. I love every verse of it, every phrase that tells us what's happening. Right up to the last verse, the last phrase, where they say, whoa, we've never seen anything like this before. So we've been in this little series that we're calling Encounters with Jesus. And the idea that one meeting in one meeting can change a lifetime. For a lot of people here, this is our personal story. And I want you to know that if you're here this morning and you're carrying a heavy load of life and mistakes and failures and defeats, or maybe you found a life of success and wins and you still found that it comes up empty in the most important things of life, here's what I hope that you'll see. That one meeting can change your lifetime. Could you say that with me this morning? One meeting can change your lifetime. Would you try it one more time? One meeting can change your lifetime. Yeah. Yeah, I hope that you hear that. Not just my voice, but sort of echoing around this room and the voices of the people that are surrounding you, the nice people that are experienced, have experienced the same thing. That's what's happening here in our text. What I want you to see is that for this one life-changing moment to happen to this paralyzed guy, I mean, that's what the sick of the palsy means. It means that he was paralyzed. And in order for that one life-changing thing, moment to happen to him, he was going to need a small group of a band of brothers. I mean, totally committed, accept no failure, break through every obstacle, band of brothers and friends that are going to get him there. Because he wasn't going to get there on his own. And really, our focus is going to be on those guys. You remember maybe last week what we said, that two things as we're kind of introducing things. Number one, there's no coincidences in life. Remember that? Nothing that has happened in your life is just by chance. The fact that you're here this morning is not a coincidence. It's God's plan. So there's no coincidences in life. And number two, there are no inconsequential stories in the Bible. We talked about the fact that in the gospel, we have a number of stories of Jesus' life, but we don't have all the stories. And any story or instance that we find in the gospels is there for a reason. It's here for a purpose. So we want to know, what was God trying to tell us? What do we need to know? Because this has been included in the gospels of his life. So Jesus is speaking inside the house that we're introduced to in this chapter, and four guys bring a paralyzed man to the place. He's carried on some kind of a stretcher, and there are people everywhere. No place to stand. There's no way you're going to get into the house where Jesus was. There's a lot of things that we could talk about from this passage, but I want to focus in primarily in the first four verses. We'll make a few references to the later text, but I want to talk about the four guys that are carrying the stretcher. And I want us together to take a real close look and find out, examine whether you are or whether we are like these guys at all. I think there are four specific things about them that we can notice this morning. Here they are. Number one, they cared enough about their friend to do something radical to bring him to Jesus. I think it's interesting that we're not told who these men were. And I don't think it was a mistake. So we don't know. Maybe one was the father. I mean, that makes sense to me. I'm a father of five. I could put myself in this scene. For years, his heart had ached for his son that had been so sick and paralyzed. Maybe it was his brothers. I could see that too. I got three older brothers. I got a feeling that if my three older brothers felt like they could do something, they'd change my life, they would do anything possible. They could find somebody else. They could get four guys to help me, whatever it would cost. It could be his brothers. Maybe it was his friends, his bros, his chelus. What if it was just some of his acquaintances, not his brothers, not his father, not family? We don't know. Maybe it was people he didn't even know that well, but people that cared enough for somebody like him that they're willing to go out of their way sacrificing in this kind of an action to help him. You should know that there wasn't a lot of sympathy in first century culture for someone like this man who couldn't pull his own weight. From other passages, we know that when someone had physical problems, everybody would have assumed that it was because of some sin. There's a story over in John chapter 9, early part of John 9, that tells about a blind man coming to Jesus, and his disciples were there. Remember this? And the disciples asked Jesus, who sinned that this man was born blind? They just assumed somebody did. Was it his father or him? Who sinned in order that this would happen? And Jesus, of course, responded that no, there wasn't anyone that sinned, neither one of them, but he was born blind so that God would be glorified in his life. But this was the culture. What would happen then? That a person like this would be ostracized, really, from all of society. They wouldn't be able to provide for themselves. They'd be left to lay at the side of a road. We find these stories often, beggars at the side of the road, often because of some physical handicap, something else that took place that caused them to kind of be shunned, to be put aside within that society. That's who this guy was, left out. And yet in this situation, we have something really unique. We have these four men who cared, who reached out. Some of you might be here today because of a band of brothers like this, or sisters. Your story, maybe sometime in the past, was broken life, challenging circumstances, and you had some brothers, you had some sisters that came along and cared for you in this way and helped bring you to Jesus. Man, how blessed are you? We've been talking about our mission during this little series, in this Encounters with Jesus series, that's what we've been calling it. We talk about it around here. The mission is helping people develop a heart for God. That won't be new to you. It's mission statement. And we use four words to clarify our discipleship pathway, the model. You see them a lot. Come, grow, serve, go. It's just trying to give some clarity for next steps. If you come and you become a follower of Jesus, what does that mean like here at Harvest? How can we help you walk along in your spiritual path, your spiritual journey? If I can give you a quick review, we've been doing this through this month. We've been talking about come, make a commitment to Christ and his church. Grow, make a commitment to growing in your faith by practicing the way of Jesus. Serve, make a commitment to using your gifts in meaningful ministry. And then this morning, this is the focus of our text, go. Make a commitment to sharing your faith across our island and around the world. That's why Mike Cepeda read this morning from Matthew 28, the Great Commission. Go therefore, make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son. And I'm going to go with you. That was what Jesus said, his last command to the people before he left. It's the mission. That's what we're called to do, to go. And this is actually what we see in this text before us. Four men who teamed up, listen to me, by helping those who were broken or wounded and hurting and leading them to Jesus. Here's the second thing to notice. They believed that Jesus was the answer. They believed that the answer to their friends' problems was Jesus. Right? I'm not just talking about they thought or they hoped or they kind of believed. They believed. This conviction pressed them deep down. I mean, if this doesn't work, you talk about ridicule. Go to work the next day and everybody is snickering. I mean, those are the dudes that carried that guy up on that roof and tore that lady's roof. I mean, she was so mad. Talk about a bunch of wackos. Notice that this is a gospel-connected compassion. They weren't just nice people. They weren't just nice people doing nice things in this world. There's a lot of nice people in this world. I'm thankful for that. But that's not what this was. They brought him to Jesus. I mean, we read down through verse 5. It says, when Jesus saw their faith, then he said to this man, he said, your sins are forgiven. Not physical healing. At the end of the story, there's also physical healing, but not originally. It's spiritual healing. It's forgiveness. And sometimes we think that we need physical healing. We want to get our marriage fixed. And we want to overcome our addictions. We want to get this mess of my life cleaned up in some way. And what Jesus, I think his example shows us, is that what we really need is we need forgiveness. And when forgiveness comes, then we have a new life and our perspectives can start to change. And that's what these guys understood. So this must be your conviction that Jesus is the one who can meet the real life needs of the people that you know. And more than likely, they're not going to get to him on their own. They need you to bring them. And number three, I'm getting passionate about this. They did not permit difficult circumstances to discourage them. They did not allow obstacles to detour them. Man, I love this so much. Verse 4 says that when they saw the size of the crowd and that the door was blocked, these men didn't say, hey, sorry, Charlie, it's not going to happen today. I guess we can't get through the crowd. I guess you're just going to have to go back the same broken way that we carried you here. No. They went up on the roof. You talk about serious persistence. Like many Palestinian houses, this roof probably had an outside stairway that led up to a flat roof. It was not unusual in the heat of the Middle East for in these kind of block mud houses for them to want to have a rooftop. They'd sit up there in the evening. They'd find some cool breeze in that area. And so often these houses would be built with a roof type, you know, not unlike houses around here. And there would be an outside stairway that would make their way up there. And up they went. This stretcher in tow. And they got to the top and they started digging. The roof probably would have been a composite of grass and clay, clay tiles and laths. It wasn't like a modern roof. It's not like a roof around here. You need a jackhammer, you know, to get through the roof. But I think they might have tried that. But it also wasn't some simple branches. It wasn't like a koyang. It was a permanent roof. It was strong enough to walk on. It was built to keep out the rain. So these men go up to the top of that house and they start digging a hole. And I'm not talking about a little hole. I mean, this is a hole big enough to lower a stretcher down through it. And I don't know exactly how this happened. Maybe they saw a little bit of, you know, fishing rope lying around, and they, you know, one of them says, "Hey, listen, we could go up on the roof and we could grab some fishing rope. We could put it around and we could lower him down into the room." And I'm guessing there had to be at least one, maybe a few of them going, "What, are you crazy? We're going to go up and tear this person's roof apart?" He's like, no. There's no way that we can get our friend to Jesus if we don't do something like this. I don't know exactly how it happened, but somehow the four of them decided, "I'm in. I'm going to be part of this. I'll help." So up they go, carrying this stretcher, get up to the top, and they start digging through whatever's up there, making that, you know, that rooftop firm so that they could walk on it and keep the rain out. Whatever, they start tearing it apart. And can you imagine being down in the, you know, in the room? And you're looking up, it's Jesus and some others, and all of a sudden there's a little space and there's, you know, some dust that's falling down on their heads. And before you know it, there's a hole that's dug and somebody sticks his head down in it. And they just keep widening that space until they could lower this man on a mat down to where Jesus was. I look at those guys, and I think about, I wonder who the first one was with the idea, because I want to be that guy. And who was it that thought creatively enough and was not going to be detoured by the obstacles that were coming at him to say, "Hey, we can do this"? So they did it at great risk, at great cost. You know, the kind of ministry that we see in the New Testament, we see it all through the book of Acts. And then if you study church history, after the end of the book of Acts, when the history that we no longer have in the scriptures, you find these men and women, the church, going out from Jerusalem, spreading out through Judea and Samaria and the uttermost parts of the earth. And the apostles are spread out in this early Christianity, and that stuff was just full of this kind of stuff. The type of world-impacting ministry that these disciples practiced was not safe. And it wasn't always socially. Hey, understand this, that playing it safe is sometimes just another way of playing it small. God doesn't call us to the faith kiddie pool. He asks us to step out into the deep. It's a little bit radical and sometimes unconventional. Not afraid of the establishment. Today, this morning is Vision Sunday, and we're beginning a few months, but really a year of celebrating God's goodness on Guam. The 50th year of the celebration of Harvest Baptist Church and Harvest Ministries. And this has been our story. This has been our legacy for 50 years. Men and women of faith who believed God for a little bit more. who stepped out in some ways that along the path, you know, you think about how God brought this campus together. You think about how God brought this combination of ministries together over 50 years. And it didn't happen by backing up when obstacles presented themselves. Listen, I want you to mark this down somewhere where you won't forget it. Maybe someplace where it'll stare you in the face. And that is this, that broken people need bold friends. Hurting people need heroic friends. Now I get it, this guy was paralyzed and he knew that he needed Jesus' help. I mean, he was happy that his friends were bringing him. A lot of times in our lives, the broken and the hurting people around us, they're not really sure that they really want you to bring, they want you to bring them to Jesus. Is there another option? Is there something else that, you know, maybe you could help me with? But that doesn't change the issue. You might need to be more creative. You might need to be more bold, but that just means it's different obstacles and different challenges. Ripping open roof tiles wasn't polite, and it wasn't practical, and it wasn't cheap, but Jesus calls it faith. And these guys were willing to risk the comfort and the reputation and probably some finances. I'm guessing somebody had to pay for the repair on that roof. And real ministry has always been about people like this. Pioneers and trailblazers and roof wreckers. And I get it, not everybody is the pioneer sort of personality. Some of us, you know, get nervous even when we start talking about this. But I'm just saying, don't settle for leaving the adventure to somebody else. God's going to push you out of your comfort zone. It's what he does. And I'm not talking about super Christians. Exactly the opposite. This is just ordinary people like these guys, like you, like me, who just believes that God cares about people. Let me give you this fourth thought and then a couple applications. Here's the fourth one. They understood the great impact of the combined effort of a group of people with a common purpose. Did you know that this is one of the great benefits of the church? One of the reasons that God designed the church. There's a significant difference between the impact of one believer, one lone person on his or her own, and the impact of a group of believers who all together are focused on accomplishing the same thing. The group is not just like an addition, it's a multiplication of influence and impact when we together combine together in order to see, you know, something accomplished. The group dynamic, the synergy of the group dynamic is so much more significant. It's the difference between walking into a dark room with a single light and then walking into a dark room with multiple lights. I don't want to scare you, but our AV team is going to turn off the lights here. A dark room with one light is one thing, but a dark room with multiple lights starts to change the picture. You know, sometimes when the lights start to go on, then others join in. Go ahead and join in. And before long, a single light that has an impact. It's not like you don't have anything on your own. But when it's surrounded by a bunch of other people who are allowing their light to shine, this is what Jesus said. Let your light so shine that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Remember that old Sunday school song that said, don't hide it under a bushel? Let it shine. You guys know that song? Would you sing it with me? This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Yeah, it really is powerful. You guys can hit the lights. When we when together we commit to allowing our lights to shine in a dark world, in a broken world, the impact, it's not just additional impact. The impact is significantly multiplied. And when one person said, I got to figure out how to get this, my friend up on the roof. He probably can't do it on his own. But when there was two and three and four that said, I'm with you, I'll help. Let's figure out what to do. Let's find a way. Because our friend, we know our friend needs to get to see Jesus. Let me give you a couple applications before I'm done here. Number one, we'll always have greater impact together than you will on your own. Listen, that's powerful stuff. Life-changing realization for this man. And we all have different gifts, different personalities. You might not be kind of the bold, courageous initiator. Who knows? Maybe only one of the four was. But listen, surround yourself with a couple of guys like that. Because when that blessing happens, when that man reaches Jesus and Jesus forgives his sin and heals him and he walks out of there, he picks up his mat and walks out. When that happens, you want to be one of the group that made it happen. You don't want to be on the group that's kind of, you know, hanging out around, you know, laughing at the guys who are trying it. And for sure, you don't want to be a part of the group whose eyes were so focused on what they're doing that they left their back to the need of the man who is laying there paralyzed. Can you imagine that? I believe with all my heart that God sees what's going on here on Guam, here at Harvest. And I think he sees and looks and says, you know, where are four men? Where are four ladies that will care enough, who will encourage each other, will put our lights together, so that we can make a difference for Christ in this island. Verse 12, the result. We've never seen anything like this before. It just makes me laugh. I bet they hadn't. When we bring people to Jesus and they are healed and their lives are changed, the result of everybody around is awe and worship and change lives. We'll always have greater impact together than you'll have on your own. We must not be discouraged by the obstacles. Of course there are going to be obstacles. That's what keeps everybody else from getting anything done. Some people have to say, forget about the obstacles. Climb up on the roof. Let's start digging. And then number three, we must start asking two questions. What are the needs and how can we plan, can we strategize to meet them? I've told you before, I think this is the simple definition of vision. To, open our eyes so that we see the needs. If we don't open up our eyes and we don't see the needs, then we're never going to have any initiative to try to meet them. So first we got to open up our eyes. Jesus says, lift up your eyes and look on the hills. They are white already unto harvest. So we got to see the needs. And then we have to think, how, God, are you going to allow us to meet them? How are you going to use me with my gifts, my situation? How do you want to use me? Because you've called me, you've called us, but you've called me. And I'm just asking you guys on, you know, this is Vision Sunday 2025. I'm just asking, would you dream with me? 2025, yes. But I'm talking about the next 10 years and the next 50 years. Could we dream about caring enough about the people around us that have brokenness in their lives and have woundedness in their hearts and have struggles in their life, and they need Jesus? They may not even know it yet, but they need Jesus. Can we care enough about them to start to think, what are we supposed to do about it? So dream about caring for and meeting the needs of this island, whatever it costs in roof tiles. I'm asking you to pray with me. I don't know what God has in store, but I know this, as God keeps bringing people into the family here at Harvest, I know that God did not bring us together so we could sit in this campus and bask in our privilege of worshiping Jesus while our backs are turned to the needs that are both spiritual and physical around us. For sure, He is drawing us together. He is drawing us together for more than just that. I preached from this text for the first time about 20 years ago. And ever since that time, it's been like a foghorn in my soul. I feel it. The title of the message 20 years ago was Wreck the Roof. When I preached from this text 7 years ago here, in one of those first weeks that I was here, I used the same title, Wreck the Roof. What did these four guys do when it looked like they hit a dead end? They wrecked the roof. They didn't just settle. They didn't play it safe. They didn't care what anybody else thought of how they might be judged. They cared so much about their friend that they pulled out all the stops and they piled up on that roof. You know, when I preach this message or this text, the first time, in God's goodness, he used that and maybe some other things going on to form a group of people that God started doing something really special in their lives. Actually, a few of them now are pastoring in churches around the mainland. And I get a chance to interact with them from time to time and talk about what's going on and what ministries are happening and what the obstacles are. And it's a funny thing. It is not unusual in those conversations, as we're talking about some obstacle or some challenge and what are they going to do about it and what the next step is, for this theme to come up. And they'll say, well, we got to wreck the roof. I had a good friend of mine now. He's a pastor of outreach in Florida. He's been here for one of our camps. A couple months after we were talking about this together, he bought a t-shirt and he had embroidered on it. He gave it to me. It said, Wreck the Roof. I looked for it last night. I couldn't find it. I wanted to show it to you guys this morning and model it for you. I don't know what it means each time. I don't know what it means for you. I don't necessarily know what it means for us, but I do know that that this story in the Gospels is not inconsequential. It was there for a reason. It's not the only story, but there's a lesson here for us. And one of them is, if we're going to be followers of Jesus, if we're going to care for the people around us, if we're going to fulfill the mission that God's given to us, then part of our thinking is going to have to be, as obstacles appear, we don't just walk away in passive deference. We wreck the roof. We decide what it means. We figure out how we get there so that we can bring people to Jesus. Because they have to see him. They have to meet him. They have to see and hear and sense and have him heal them. I'm going to ask Andrew to come, the piano to come. Verse 5, the first part of verse 5 said, when Jesus saw their faith. That's kind of the crux of the text. When Jesus saw their faith. God always honors faith, and he honors the people who have faith and who live it and show it. I know that I'm a dreamer, but I look around here at all the talents and all the resources, and I think, what if? Listen, there are people on this island. There are people in your world just like this man, not paralyzed, but broken and needing to meet Jesus. Young people, high school kids, they don't even know it yet, but they got to meet Jesus, and who's going to bring them? College students, we got two, you know, colleges, actually multiple colleges on the island. Whole bunch of people in this very critical time in their life, and they don't even know it yet, but the number one thing that they need in their life is they need Jesus. And if they don't find him, if somebody doesn't bring him, then they're going to experience the same brokenness of sin and life that all the rest of everybody does. Military, Guam's a place where a lot of military come and they're searching. A lot of questions going on. You're kind of away from everything. I tell almost every military person I meet, man, Guam is a place for reset. If you'll take it. Bunch of the distractions that you've had up till now, they're gone. It's kind of just what you got right here. And if you'll take it, this can be a place of spiritual reset for you. There's young couples battling for their marriages. Who's going to help them bring them to Jesus? We have to see him first. If we just walk in and out of this place and all we see is each other, so we got to see them and open our eyes and then be willing to do something. Probably something creative. We might have to wreck the roof. Might have to build a bridge to do what God wants you to do. To not settle for sitting in neutral with our backs to the needs of the world. So my question this morning for you is, will you be part of the four? The roof wrecking team of Harvest Baptist Church that will dream, will ask God specifically to help you answer this question. What are the needs and how could we plan to meet them? I think God's asking for volunteers, and the question is, will you raise your hand and join the group who gets involved in a life-changing ministry of introducing hurting people to Jesus? Would you bow your heads with me? I'm going to give you just a couple minutes of personal reflection and spiritual inventory. I believe the message is clear. My prayer is that it would be. One of the things we've been asking for a few months around here is, who is your one? Is there one person that you can identify that God's brought into your world that if you would allow you, you could help lead him, help him to know his or her need for Jesus? It might mean that you got to be creative and bold, but who is your one? So I wonder if there's some that just as I give you a moment to pray, and James says be a doer of the word and not just hearer. I wonder if you just pray and say, God, help me to be one that's willing to be part of that roof wrecking team. Don't let this just be an idea for me. Would it change me? Not just like a one-time thing, but would it begin kind of a new work in my life? I could grow in the months and years to come, that the way I go about ministry might be different. It wouldn't be sterile and safe. That you'd just push me out of this comfort zone, that I could live, you know, year after year in ways that I'd be bringing people up on the roof to help them to see Jesus. Would you pray that prayer with me? And then just one question. I wonder if there's some that would say, Pastor Gary, I'm really more like that paralyzed guy in the story. I'm hurting. Not sure that there's ever been a time in my life when I was introduced to Jesus on a personal basis. And I feel that this morning. And I don't, even right now, I don't necessarily know what to do about it, but I sense that. Would you pray for me about that? Would there be some that would be bold enough? Just raise your hand. I won't embarrass you or anything like that, but say, that's me. Thank you. Thank you. Others, hey, I feel like that paralyzed guy. Would you pray for me? Thank you. I'm going to wait a minute. Others, that's me. Would you pray for me? I need somebody to help, really, that I'd see Jesus. Father, I pray now in this moment for those that have boldly and courageously lifted their hand. God, you brought each one of them here, and you've spoken to them. And Lord, you desire to forgive them and to heal them. I pray that today would be a day of that healing. I'd ask that you'd give them courage for the next step. And would you draw them to you in a powerful way that could only be the work of your word and your spirit? Help them to know that. Then, Lord, I pray across this room, would you allow there to be a movement of your spirit so that we would have a host of roof-wrecking teammates that would live our lives differently? Would you begin to shape us in that way? Out of the ordinary, not looking for safety, asking you how you could use us to bring broken people to the one who saves. So help us today, individually and as a church, to model this kind of ministry and this kind of life. Thank you for speaking to us today. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.